vote you out of there. We the people have awakened to your tricks. You vote to get this pass, you'll be out on your... Cause we the people have awakened. And to put it in words you might understand, if you had the common sense that God gave a billy goat, you'd no doubt notice that your constituents, the electorate, that's us voters, are on to your pork barrel special interest tax and spend scam. And I'm all for working hard to keep this planet clean. But man-made global warming just don't make no sense to me. But if you insist on buying into this media false alarm, I know a couple of guys who wheel and deal in frozen farm. You can't forget about how we did it yesterday. Obama is changing things and doing it his way. And all that I can say is, it's an Obama nation. Well, now he doesn't seem to care about the Constitution, that's passé. He's got new solutions, and no need to bother Congress, they just get in his way.
Get his way!
With executive orders and a room full of czars, he's taking old banks and building our cars. He wants to run health care and control our take-home pay.
Itemize the things you covet as you squander through your life. Bigger cars, bigger houses, term insurance for your wife. Tuesday evenings with your harlot, and on Wednesdays it's your charlatan analyst. He's high up on your list. You've got air-conditioned sinuses and dark, disturbing doubt about religion. And you keep those cards and letters going out while your secretary's tempting you. Your morals are exempting you from guilt and shame. Heaven knows you're not to blame. You better take care of business, Mr. Businessman. What's your plan?
Everything is beautiful in its own way. Like a starry summer night or a snow-covered winter's day. And everybody's beautiful in their own way. Under God's heaven, the world's gonna find a way.
And joining us right now at PMP Network is one of my favorite performers and songwriters. You know him, you love him, you've been entertained by him for decades. Ray Stevens joins us. Ray, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Mike.
It's really an amazing story from you. First of all, I guess your name when you were born was Harold Ray Ragsdale?
Yeah, and your name was Mark, and I just called you Mike because we have a banjo player down here named Mike.
Okay,
Mike,
well,
Snyder.
I'm Mark, and I don't play banjo at all, but that's okay.
Oh, well, that's good, because the last canoe trip I was on, somebody yelled, "Paddle faster, I think I hear banjos." So, anyway, I was born Harold Ray Ragsdale.
Yeah, now that's in Clarksdale, Georgia.
It's Clarkdale, no S.
Clarkdale.
It's a single Clark there.
Yeah, very small town west of Atlanta.
That's right.
Yeah. Now, tell us a little bit about your early career, how you started, because I know that you achieved, you had stuff going on in the late 50s and early 60s, you started hitting the charts.
Well, yeah, I was very fortunate. I've always loved music, and my mama made me take piano lessons when I was a young kid. I started when I was 6, and I didn't want to, but she just kept after me, so I did, just to, keep peace in the house, and I'm glad she did, because I wanted to be a baseball player, and it turns out I would have been a lousy baseball player, but, when you're a kid, you don't know that. So anyway, I met people who were influential in the music business, as luck would have it. And as a teenager, and I showed an interest in writing songs, and so I wrote a song for a gentleman in Atlanta who was a music publisher, and he liked it so much he got me a record deal, and I came to Nashville in 57 and cut my first recording. I was still a senior in high school, and boy, was that a thrill.
Wow, that is amazing to be a senior in high school and be cutting records. Wow.
Yeah, for a major label at that.
Yeah.
I mean, I was just blown away by the whole situation.
Yeah, now, you had, was the first label you did, was it Mercury, or was it one before that?
My first label was Capitol. Actually,
oh, okay.
It was Capitol Records subsidiary label, which was new at the time, Prep, P-R-E-P.
Okay.
And it's a good name for a label if you're, getting ready to, you know, go on a major label. But it was actually, it had major distribution, but they called it Prep, so
yeah.
There you go.
So, yeah, Capitol Records, of course, at that time was one of the biggest companies in the country.
Yes,
still is,
sure.
I think. Actually, but you know, it's interesting that since the 1950s, all the changes that have happened in radio and in records and despite all that stuff, and I'm not going to skip all the time between because I want to talk about some of my favorite songs of yours. But it's amazing to me that when you're 70, that you are as meaningful now as you were when you were doing things like Mr. Businessman and Everything is Beautiful, where you were making a point. Now with the global warming song and We the People and Come to the USA and Throw the Bums Out, you are still one of the people up there kind of giving important lyrics and letting people know what's going on.
Well, thank you, Mark, for saying that. I appreciate it. I've always loved what I do. And I still have a great desire to be as instrumental as I can in influencing people who listen to music to understand what I think is what we got today is a crisis. And I'm just happy to be able to do that.
I'm surprised you haven't come up with a song yet about the oil leak.
Well, I've got a couple, but. Just hadn't gotten them out there yet, and it takes time to write them and produce them and make videos, which is the way to go these days, and get it all on the air. So we're still like the duck on the still pond. We're paddling as hard as we can underneath.
Hmm. Now you you actually performed at one of the Tea Party rallies, and the Tea Party's become controversial, but. I'm a Boston guy, and we had the original Tea Party, and I think that the Tea Party that's out there right now is just as important in terms of letting people know that the country might be going in the wrong direction.
Well, the Tea Parties are wonderful, and I'm a big supporter of the Tea Parties. I actually performed at two Tea Party rallies, one here in Nashville where I live, and the other in Washington, D.C., which was a very huge event, and it was a big thrill for me to be able to do that.
Hmm. Well, you know, I see all the controversy because the mainstream media is liberal, and they're trying to whack Sarah Palin and anybody at all, and then they take fringe people from these tea parties and call them tea partiers, and they're trying to kind of brand the entire organization as a racist group rather than a group that's really trying to make some changes back to where America used to be.
Yeah, it's a pitiful argument, isn't it? All they can come up with is racist.
Well, it is.
I mean, explain to me how that works. What? Racist? Hello? I don't get that. I mean, that's like saying, that's the most absurd thing. I'm not even going to get into it, but anyway.
Well, I don't know. It aggravates me too. And when I have arguments with people about immigration, and I'm obviously grandson of immigrants, but we're talking about illegal immigration. That's the key word. And how can anybody be opposed to it? But it's interesting when the media takes the Arizona law, which actually allows the police if someone's breaking the law, to ask them if they're legal or not. It doesn't just pick on people randomly. You have to be breaking the law.
Well,
that,
all these people that are protesting in Arizona need to go across the border and protest Mexico for having such a crappy government in the first place, make all those nice folks want to leave and come over here. I mean, I love Mexicans. Don't get me wrong. I'm not for, I'm for Arizona and what they're trying to do to stop illegal immigration. But I like Mexicans. I just don't want to take them all at once. We can't do it. It'll break the society. And the thing is, what we need to be doing is concentrating on saying, look, Calderon, Let's fix your government so these people don't feel like they got to leave to make a living. That's ridiculous.
Well, of course, the other thing is if you wanted to emigrate to Mexico, see what happens to you.
Absolutely.
Let's go back to the music. Because, but again, you know, the music that you're doing now is relevant, and it's politically tinged. And it has been for years. I mean, even Everything is Beautiful and Mr. Businessman, they all have political overtones to them.
Well, I've always tried to pay attention to what's going on in the world, and we got some serious things going on now. I mean, you know, the media you mentioned that won't air, for instance, certain things that are so relevant today, like the Black Panthers saying kill cracker babies, they won't even air that. And they're complicit in trying to make us a socialist society. I don't understand it. There's no place in the world to run to. I mean, if America falls to the tyrants, it's over.
Yeah, I don't understand it either, actually, because the media that's doing this, you know, the New York Times, the Boston Globe, all these papers, their circulation's going down the tubes because they're no longer a reliable source of information because they don't give both sides.
They don't seem to care. They're a bunch of elite snobs, I guess. I don't get it.
I don't get it either. Let's go back in time again. We're talking with Ray Stevens. And we talked a little bit about the 1950s and the 60s hit, and all of a sudden you had all these hits in a row. Ahab the Arab, Harry the Hairy Ape, Funny Man, a bunch of different things that kind of put you right up in the stratospheres. You had mentioned that you were recording when you were a senior in high school, but some of the music really started taking off not that far after that.
Yeah, well, you know, like I say, I've always been very fortunate. I've met the right people at the right time. And I moved from Atlanta, where I lived until I was 22 years old, to up to Nashville when I was 22, because I had a job offer to go to work for Mercury. You mentioned Mercury earlier in our conversation here today. And that's when my career on that label started. It was 1962. And I recorded Ahab the Arab 20 days after moving to Nashville. Actually, 18 days, but who's counting? And had a bunch of comedy hits along about that time. Then later I moved to Monument and had songs like Mr. Businessman and Guitarzan and things like that. But in 1970, I moved to Barnaby, which is Andy Williams' label, and recorded Everything is Beautiful. So, you know, I've just been jumping around and doing different styles of music and having a big time.
I mean, I grew up in the 60s, and I actually remember watching the Andy Williams show and watching you on there, and then I remember you having a summer show, the Ray Stevens show. It was around 1970 or so.
I think it was, you're right, absolutely, 70, and it was called Andy Williams Presents the Who is Ray Stevens show, because we were playing on the fact that most people had never heard of me, and so we... All through the theme of the show was, well, who is this guy, you know?
And the other thing about your career, now a lot of people associate you with the novelty hits, because you had quite a few of them.
Right.
And we're going to talk about one of them, which became a number one hit in a minute. But you were also writing, as I mentioned, you know, songs like Mr. Businessman, but didn't you write Sunday Morning Coming Down as well?
No, Chris Christopherson wrote that.
Oh, that's what I thought. Okay, you recorded that, though, right?
I had the first record of it, and... my record didn't do very much because I didn't have the image to sell it. Johnny Cash cut it later, and it was a hit by him because he could sell the lyric, woke up Sunday morning with no way to hold my head, it didn't hurt, you know.
Mm.
And I was so convinced that I had made such a great record with Sunday Morning Coming Down. I spent weeks in the studio that during that time I got a call from Burt Bacharach and Hal David, and they wanted me to cut Raindrops Falling on My Head for the movie. And I turned them down. I said, no, I got to put out Sunday Morning Coming Down, thank you very much, because if I don't put it out now, somebody else will beat me out with it. Well, that was turned out to be an idiot move, but there you go.
Yeah, B.J. Thomas says, thank you very much.
And what? B.J. told you, I see him from time to time, and we laugh about that.
Yeah, that was a big turning point in his career. Now, you in addition, in the 60s and then in the 70s as it came along, in addition to doing... songwriting and singing, you were also producing and arranging and doing all kinds of stuff in the studios.
Yeah, I love to do that.
Yeah. I mean, you worked with some of the biggest names in entertainment.
Well, you know, like I say, I've always enjoyed what I do. I'm very blessed.
I mean, one of the things that I was reading about that I was kind of surprised at. I know that you've written a lot of songs, and I just credited you one which you didn't write. But Brooke Brenton's hit "My True Confession," which was a top 10 R&B chart song in '63. You wrote that one as well.
Yeah, I had a little help writing it. I think
Margie Singleton did it with you. Yeah.
Yeah, she worked on that with me.
Yeah, but I mean, it's pretty impressive though that that there's an R&B crossover tune. Yeah, most people associate you with country. If you're going to do songs.
Well, my first, when I was a teenager, we listened to R&B. That was our primary thing musically. And I was a big fan of Ray Charles and the Drifters and the Clovers and the Midnighters and all that kind of good stuff, you know.
Yeah, now the 70s were a good decade for you. And I remember the song Everything is Beautiful, and it had a chorus in it, and some kids were singing in it. It was actually a really cool song. And it was gospel kind of type of music, but I loved the lyrics to it. We shouldn't care about the length of the hair or the color of the skin, you know,
right.
the whole thing. But that was actually, if I remember correctly, wasn't that promoted on the show you were doing, that summer show? Wasn't that the first time it was heard on television?
Well, it could have been. I wrote the song with having in mind that it could be the theme song for that summer show, and sure enough, it was.
Yeah.
It went to, I think it went to number one on
it did.
A lot of charts.
Yeah.
But and I'd also won a Grammy that year for the Male Vocalist of the Year. So I unfortunately was in Australia at the time doing concerts down there, and Glenn Campbell picked up my Grammy for me. I'm going to get that from him one of these days.
He never got it, huh?
I'm just kidding.
Yeah, I remember another song that was shortly after that it came out, and I actually had the single of Everything is Beautiful, and also another one called America Communicate with Me.
Oh, yeah.
Which I believe was around the same year.
Well, I don't think so, but yeah. It was close.
Yeah.
I'm not sure when it was out.
Now, also in the 70s, you did a song called Bridget the Midget, and there's actually a lot of controversy about someone actually named Bridget the Midget who goes around touring in the country right now.
Oh,
and,
really?
And comes into where we are in the Boston area here.
Now?
Yeah, actually, we just had a police officer resign from a force where he had actually taken off from his shift to go see Bridget the Midget.
Ah, well, that's good. Does she sing?
I don't believe she does, no.
Oh, what does she do?
I believe she's a stripper and a porn actress.
I see. Okay, well, there you go. I'll have to go check her out.
Yeah, well, you have to bring her a song. You can
maybe she can
make that song her hit. That's kind of funny. I mean,
well, my Bridget was the queen of the blues.
She there was. Yep. I remember that song. Yeah. And you had a number of other songs in the 1970s, but one of them in 1974 was about something that folks out there listening that are younger, you might not have heard of something called streaking, but years ago when I was in college, we'd all take our clothes off and run around like nuts. And that way, there was a song called The Streak, which poked fun at it, and it became the number one hit in the United States and in Canada. And it was even number three on the country charts, too.
Oh, yeah, well, we had a lot of fun with that one. All the shows we'd play during that period, we'd get streaked. And some of them were wonderful. I mean, we had a lot of beautiful girls streak the show, which we'd stop and applaud. You know, it was wonderful.
Yeah, when the guys start doing it, it's not as much fun.
Well, no, actually, you're right.
Yeah. Now, the other thing that you did in the 70s, too, that a lot of people thought was pretty cool was your version of Misty.
Yeah, that was an accident. We were in a studio one day rehearsing for a TV show we were going to shoot the following day, and during a break in rehearsal, just for fun, we started clowning around with Misty with a banjo and a fiddle and a steel, simply because it was just so unheard of to do it that way, and it started sounding so good, I called the engineer, and we mic'd everybody, cut it in about two takes, and it came out and won a Grammy that year for the best arrangement of the year.
And it was a big success on the country charts, hit number three.
Yeah, wonderful.
Yeah, taking a version of a song and doing a different thing like you did with that one, you also did something similar. You did a doo-wop version of Indian Love Call and a ballad version of Young Love.
Yeah, well, you know, like I say, I'm always trying to look for something a little off the wall.
Well, you did that. You're always doing something off the wall, and that's a good thing. whether it's I Need Your Help, Barry Manilow, or the Honky Tonk Waltz, or anything else that you've been doing. In the 80s, your single was Shriners Convention, and then Night Games, which both did pretty well.
Yeah.
I can remember all these things as you go by, and I remember Would Jesus Wear a Rolex. I remember when that came out.
Yeah, well, you've done your homework. Wow. Well,
yeah, that one didn't make the top 40, though. I always thought it did, but I guess in number 41 it hit.
Really? Would Jesus Wear a Rolex?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll have to put it out again.
But even during the time where you weren't hitting number one on the singles charts, your albums were still doing well, and a lot of it was because of the comedy element. I think a lot of the comics, you know, things were being played and country. And so the first two albums that you made for MCA were both in the top five. I Have Returned, which hit number one in 1986, and then the greatest Hits album in 87 also got gold. So.
Yeah, well, there was the first album on RCA that was comedy that had a lot of successful songs in it was He Thinks He's Ray Stevens. And the reason for the title of the album is I was dressed as Napoleon on the front. And, of course, the old standby joke is when you go crazy, you start thinking you're Napoleon. So I've dressed up as Napoleon and called the album He Thinks He's Ray Stevens. And it was a fun album because we had songs in there like It's Me Again, Margaret, the Mississippi Squirrel Revival, Get Your Tongue Out of My Mouth, I'm Kissing You Goodbye, things like that.
Yeah, you not only dressed up like Napoleon Bonaparte, but I remember in other albums you were Humpty Dumpty and General MacArthur or something like that.
Yeah, that's I Have Returned album, General MacArthur.
Yeah, yeah. So, did a lot of those things. In the 90s, still doing all-time greatest hits, comic hits. And then you opened a theater in Branson, Missouri, like many of the country acts, in 1991,
had a great run there. I love Branson. It's a great place. We're going over there again this year. I sold my theater in 2006, but I'm going over there to work the Welk Resort September 15th. I'll be there for 6 weeks.
Ah. Yeah, that's a booming area, but it must have been tough to be to own the theater, too, because of the business responsibilities as well as the creative ones.
Well, yeah, it was a little bit of a stretch, but we managed to pull it off. I had a lot of help, you know.
Yeah. Now you looking at the 2000s as you got into. The other thing is you created your own label, Clyde Records, which you still have, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, we're doing well with Clyde. It's we now have national distribution, and we sell a lot of product via direct marketing. You'll see ads on TV selling Clyde Records and things like that.
Well, I'll tell people that there's a We the People CD with a bonus DVD that has a lot of great stuff in it. The Global Warming Song, We the People, Caribou Barbie, Where the Government Come to the USA, Throw the Bums Out, a lot of the great stuff is in there. And a bonus song, Mr. Businessman's on there as well. And also Ray Stevens' The Ones You Want is available as well. And you can check it out at raystevens.com. And you get everything there, which is, it's a really nice website.
Well, thank you. Yeah, we're proud of it. And please check us out on the web, raystevens.com.
Yeah, you are still doing so much stuff. And are you still writing like every day? You write a lot of music still?
I don't write every day, but I write a lot. We got a little nest of writers over here at my office, and a lot of guys and girls. And my daughter's a great writer, and Susie is her name, and we all get together and discuss the situation, and we come up with some great, I think, great stuff, great songs.
So when you go on the road, do you bring Susie with you? Is she a musician as well?
She is. She doesn't travel with me. She travels with her own group, and she just got back from England. She did a little tour over there, and she's a very talented gal.
Mm.
Real proud of her.
We're talking with Ray Stevens, and in April of 2010, Ray released We the People, the CD I just talked about. But it should be noted that in December of 2009, you issued the single on an online video, and within about a month or so, you had 1 million hits on YouTube with that song.
Yeah, I think we wound up with over 3 million hits. Which song are you talking about?
We the People, which started it all off, really.
Gosh, yeah, I think it's way over 3 million hits.
Yeah, that was 1 million hits in just a month which was amazing.
We were astounded, I'll tell you that.
Throw the Bums Out, which was your response to the health care reform package passing, was another one that became a big YouTube sensation, as did Come to the USA, which dealt with illegal immigration. So, and then the last one I saw, which is really the reason that I called to talk to you, was the Global Warming song, which I think is a wonderful song because it's it talks a little bit about what's been going on in terms of global warming. It's like a business for some certain portions of the government.
Oh, it's a big hoax. It's a big scam. It's so transparent. I don't see how anybody believes in man-made global warming. I'm not sure there is global warming. I don't think there is. But if there is, it's certainly not man-made. And you know, there's nothing, no amount of carbon credits you can buy that will change one iota of what's going to happen to the climate in the world. That's just totally absurd. All it's going to do is make a few people rich who are already rich and don't deserve power over our lives, which is what they're really after.
Well, in addition, it's also going to make some people poor because there'll be a lot less jobs because they're going to be killing the job market when they do that.
Yeah, I don't like little curlicue fluorescent light bulbs.
Yeah, they don't work right, by the way. I've had a problem with them.
Yeah, I do too. They're awful.
It's not good. But it really is. It hits it right on the head. Ray writes a song about a couple of brothers that buy some frozen wasteland, hoping it's going to become a beachfront property. And it's a very, very funny song, and it's right on, I got to tell you, right on. So, folks, you can go to raystevens.com. And Ray, it's a real pleasure talking to you. I hope to do it again one day.
Thank you, Mark. My pleasure.
Take care.